Welcome to High Desert Dialogue, your community affairs program heard on great High Desert radio stations like Y102, Cat Country 100.7, 106.5 The Fox, Dog 960, and HD 96.3. Now, here's your host for High Desert Dialogue, Roxanne Scafidi.
Hi, it's Roxanne Scafidi for High Desert Dialogue. We present to you a special Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders program.
I'm a visionary, I'm a leader, I'm extraordinary. The light can get you down sometimes, it seems. I'll never let it take away my dream.
Hi, this is Regina Weatherspoon Bell. Welcome to our special Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders program featuring some extraordinary people. Thank you for joining us. Good morning. I am here today with a very special guest, someone that I've known for, I'm not even going to say how many years because I can't remember, but who has an amazing history, family history here in the High Desert, and who has also, from his professional career, accomplished so much. It's my honor to introduce to our listening audience Mr. Julian Weaver. Julian, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Regina.
I want to start out by having you tell us a little bit, because I know you're a familiar name in the High Desert community, but for some of those who may know the name but not know why they know the name, can you tell us a little bit about your career?
Yes, I'd be glad to. My career actually began in Victorville as a student who went from first grade through 12th grade in
Wow.
Victorville, having lived in Bell Mountain area. I left in 1965 to go to college after mm-hmm. I graduated from high school. I went to college at a university called United States International University in San Diego. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was called California Western University. I was fortunate enough to receive an athletic football scholarship to attend that school, and graduated from there in 1970.
Okay.
I had two options. So one, I had a contract in hand from the San Diego Unified School District to teach at a school where I did my student teaching, which was Lincoln High School in San Diego, predominantly African-American, black
okay.
high school. And then 2 days before that contract needed to be signed, I got a call from Don Condi, who was the principal at Victor Valley High School.
Mm.
I never met him, never saw him, never heard of him. He called and said, I'd like to offer you a job. And
this was 1970.
This was 1970.
So the climate here was a little different.
The climate was considerably different
okay.
than it is now.
Okay.
So I weighed the pros and cons of that, talked to my wife then, my ex-wife, and she was kind of reluctant to moving to the High Desert, and I was excited about coming back home. And I took the offer, which was probably one of the wisest decisions career-wise that I made in my life, to come back to the High Desert. I started as a teacher
mm-hmm.
In 1970. I taught American government, black history, and sociology.
Wow.
And really enjoyed that teaching experience. I was the young kid on the block. I was the new kid on the block. And I was the only African-American teacher at the school.
1970.
I saw things that began to kind of bother me in terms of how the African-American kids were being treated and what the expectation was of them compared to the other students in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And that expectation was, you're not going to be much. Take the lower level classes and, you know, go to the trade route and do that kind of thing. Nothing encouraging kids to take leadership roles. Nothing encourage African-American kids to take and prepare for college and university.
Which was in direct opposition and conflict of what your experience had been, because you had just gone to college, come back.
Correct.
Yes,
But that's still, even when I left, there were a handful of us, when I say us, African-American kids, that went on to college. The rest of us, and probably about five of us that went on to college.
Mm.
The rest of them, again, were pushed down that vocational career path and chose that. So I decided at that point in time that I needed to make a difference in how these kids perceived themselves and what they saw as their future and their achievements, what they could be. And so I decided to change my career path at that time and went back to school. I got my counseling degree and got my master's degree in education simultaneously. And as a result of that, the same principal that hired me 3 years earlier offered me a counseling job at Victor Valley High School. So I became a counselor, became the head counselor. And then in 1976, I was chosen as assistant principal at Victor Valley High School. So I was at a very young age. I was 26 years of age, I think, at that time. 26, 27.
That's a fast track.
Extremely fast track.
Yeah.
After spending 2 years there as the assistant principal at Victor Valley High School, I applied for an opening at Victor Valley Junior High School for the principalship. And again, now I'm 28 years of age, so I'm really still, you know, wet behind the ears. And fortunately, I prevailed in the interview, and I was offered the job, and I took the job as principal of Victor Valley Junior High School. After that, I spent 3 years at Victor Valley Junior High School, and in the principalship, Don Conde, who hired me, retired. And I said, okay, I'm going to apply for the principalship at Victor Valley High School. And I was honored to receive the appointment for that. I was now 31 years of age, and I stayed there until 1991. And then I left from there, had an opportunity to go to Davis High School in Davis, California, which was a pretty prestigious high school and still is. I served 3 years there as principal. I would have stayed there longer, except my girlfriend at that time, who became my fiance, who lived in Victorville, said, no, we're not doing this.
So we got to go back.
We got to go back. In fact, she left way before that and came back to Victorville. So I took a position in the San Bernardino County Superintendent of Schools office as the director of alternative education. Long story short, I moved up the ladder very, very quickly there and became assistant superintendent of a division in the County Office of Education. And I stayed in that position until June of 2006. I started there in 1993-94 and stayed there until 2006. And I said, okay, I've done all I want to do. And I decided I would retire from public education and start taking life easy. And my objective with that was not to just sit on my bottom and not do anything. My plan was that I would eventually look for interim types of jobs in administration, either as a principal or assistant superintendent or something. We had a retirement party in my house. Within 2 days of the retirement, the Victor Valley High School District contacted me and asked if I would be interested in serving as interim
if you wanted to come out of retirement.
Right. And so I had to stop all of my retirement payments that hadn't started yet, but were getting ready to start and all of that. So I said, yeah, I'd be honored to do that. So I took over as the interim superintendent while they were doing a superintendency search. Within 2 weeks of that appointment, I said, well, how would you like to, talking to the board, how would you like to proceed with filling the position through the superintendent search process? And they kind of looked around the table at each other, looked at me, looked around at the table at each other. And I said, what's going on here? Something to that effect. And they said, well, we've talked around to people in this district and we'd like to offer you the job.
So they offered you
without doing a search.
Well, they had done their search.
Well, yeah, they had. Right. Yeah. They had done their search. So I talked to my wife, of course, and said, okay, yeah, this is something that I always wanted to do. And I took that position, and 3 years into that position, the board decided they wanted to go a different direction. And so at that point in time, I was retired and enjoying life, and looked back at my experience as an educator and could say there are, those were wonderful years for me. I enjoyed what I enjoyed what I was doing, as particularly as superintendent, because I, at that point, I really had an impact on how things were going to be done and perceived and accepted within the district. Right. So that's kind of my brief career.
So you started here in the Victor Valley as a teacher, went on to be a counselor, on to administration, right?
Yes.
Went on to the county.
Yes.
Served in that capacity, came back here, and ended that career serving as superintendent.
Correct.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, all of that to say, especially to those young listeners that we have out here, you can definitely come from here, be substantive, and come back and make a great contribution to your community.
Absolutely. And I think that was part of my hidden message at that point, was to be able to kind of translate that kind of vision to the kids within this community, because Victorville was always known up until probably 15 or 20 years ago as a blue collar mm-hmm. kind of community,
right,
where there was not a lot of aspiration about going to further your education, and especially for African American Latino kids. That was not the goal and not the objective for those kids. And by doing that and then bringing in people of color that they could see,
yes,
and model, prompted them to begin to look at life a whole lot differently. And we had a whole bunch of really successful African-American Latino kids that left Victor Valley High School District after I became an administrator there and then a superintendent. So I'm very proud
Which
of that.
Really speaks to your legacy, and I want to talk a little bit about that from a family perspective, but speaks to your legacy as an educator and as a dreamer, visionary, and leader, honoree, because it is your career in education and your commitment through community service. Now, I want to, and there's so much that we could talk about, and we've only got a short period of time, but I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the longstanding history and legacy of your family here in the High Desert. Can you just kind of share with us how far back your family goes, your family history goes here in the High Desert?
I'd like to do that. As far as I know, the first contact that my family had with the High Desert was in Bell Mountain, California. Just outside of Victorville, just north of Apple Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a small black community. What I didn't know until later was how that became a small African-American black community. And it was through the Homestead Act that was permitted individuals to receive X amount of acres of land to come out into California and wherever else, but particularly mm-hmm. in California at this time, and develop that as a residential piece of property or agricultural piece of property or whatever.
Now, set in context for us, what year was this?
Okay, my family, and I have a deed, a homestead deed that's signed by Woodrow Wilson.
President
Woodrow Wilson.
Yes.
For my great-great-grandfather, Henry W. Warren, dated December the 20th, 1915.
Wow.
And that was for 160 acres. To put that in perspective, those 160 acres were directly east of where the Apple Valley Airport is right now.
Well, 1915, let's say, is that when your family became established here in the High Desert?
As far as I know, that was when they became established in the High Desert. We came from Oklahoma and Texas.
Okay. So in 1915, there was 160 acres. And since that time, what has happened with that land?
Well, it's really interesting. We had a member of our family who was made executor of my great-grandparents. She went and borrowed money, and the property was used as collateral for the loan. Well, she was not prudent in taking care of business, and she lost the property, all 168 acres. But what my brother and I found out subsequent to that was that you could not put a lien on homesteaded property. So we tried to go through legal channels to try to get that property back. We're unsuccessful in finding out who it was sold to and who eventually wound up with it. And it's been turned over so many different times now that we just said forget it and gave up on that quest to try to get it back. But it's still sitting out there.
What an amazing history and legacy. And you still have family that is part of this community. So I want to thank you for coming in today and sharing with us just this little bit, because it sounds like this is a tip of the iceberg of your family, but also your own experience as you delved into being purposeful in what your objectives and goals were in the field of education. And I want to say personally, thank you for all of those students whose lives you touched and made an imprint on in a positive way, because they were able to see somebody who looked like them and knew that it was possible to be successful, to go above and beyond. So on behalf of DVL, we thank you for what you have done. We thank you for what you continue to do. And I'm holding you to writing that family history. But thank you for coming in today and sharing with us a little bit about your legacy.
Well, thank you for having me, and I very, very much appreciate it.
This program has been made possible by the generous support of Shear Realty, exceeding expectations for over 37 years. Visit us online at dvlproject.com and follow us on Facebook.
So good morning. I have in studio a very special guest and someone who over the past couple of years or so, I have gotten an opportunity. Yeah, 4 years.
4 years.
Wow, time flies. I have gotten an opportunity to know a little bit about, but most importantly, to observe. And so I thought it'd be very interesting to have this person come in and share with us a little bit about who she is and what she does and what motivates her to do what she does. It is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome to our DVL Project radio show, Ms. Heather Obernolte. She is the wife of Assemblyman Jay Obernolte. But I say that she is a woman to be reckoned with on her own ground, on her own rights. So thank you so much for coming in today to share with us. What a wonderful opportunity to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's jump right in. Want to learn a little bit about who is Heather Obernolte?
Who is Heather? Well, I have a degree in child psychology is where I started, from Fresno State, and then a master's from Pepperdine University.
Wow.
And I've done a lot of stuff in my life involving that, a lot of community service. I started out, I worked for the Sycamores, which is a home for physically and sexually abused boys. And that was a very difficult position for me because I just wanted to give love to these children because I felt that that's what they were missing, and that was not really what I was able to do in that situation. And so I went from that and said, so who was the most influential person for me growing up? And it was my figure skating instructors. So I became a figure skating instructor for 10 years.
Really enjoyed.
Yes. And actually, three of my previous students are now figure skating instructors. So it's been really rewarding for me to see that and see where they've gone. And then in 96, Jay and I moved up to Big Bear. And at that point, I started looking around to see what I could do. And I started working with Doves, the domestic violence shelter up in Big Bear. And I worked with them for over 12 years. I was a hotline volunteer, a supervisor, a counselor at the shelter, a legal advocate for them, working with restraining orders for our clients. And then I became a board member, and I was chairman of the board for a number of years. And then Jay and I decided to start our family. We had our two little boys, Hale and Troy. And as they were growing up, we decided to homeschool. And so I homeschooled them for 10 years until the oldest started high school and the youngest middle school.
Wow.
So it's just been a blessing for me to have that time with the boys and to be able to do that. And I really appreciate the opportunity to do that. And
wow.
During all of this time, Jay and I had our video game development studio that we owned. And so the employees loved me because I came into the office for two reasons. Either I was doing payroll, so they knew they were getting paid, or I was stocking the refrigerator with soda. So every
either
time
way,
I came in, the employees were very happy to see me come in.
Great.
And then about 4 years ago, Jay decided to run for state assembly after being in local politics for a while. And it was an interesting transition for the family. And actually, it was our oldest son that finally said, "Dad, you got to try it. You will forever regret not going for it and not trying it." And
wow.
So that is what started our transition into politics.
So you've had somewhat of a diversified background.
Oh, very much so.
Right,
yes.
And kind of career experience.
Yes.
Which is amazing because I'm sure that it is, there are things that you can take from all of those different avenues that help you in supporting your husband.
Yes. Well, one
in the
of
work
the things
that he's doing.
I try to teach people, and I feel like my position now with Jay, and we are very much a team. You've mm-hmm. seen it. We've been together since we were 17 years old, so
wow.
we've grown up together. And when he took this position in Sacramento, my biggest fear was that he was going to have this separate life without me. And I had a dream one night, and I got to go to Sacramento with him 1 week out of every month. And my mom would come and stay with our kids. And I woke up the next morning and I said, "Honey, this is going to work. We can do this." And so that has come true. I do go up to Sacramento 1 week out of every month when he's in a session up there. And so I know what's going on in Sacramento. I understand the job. I understand the people. You know, if he says, "I'm having lunch with John at the Pizza Rock," I know who John is. I know the Pizza Rock. I can still be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I come back to the district, I can be more involved in the district because I can be a bridge, a liaison between the people and their government, because I think there are so many misconceptions out there. And to me, that's one of the hardest things, is to let people know that, honestly, 90% of the people that we are involved in politics, and it probably even is a little bit more than 90%, are very good people.
Mm-hmm.
And in society, we like to demonize politicians and the government
mm-hmm.
and everything. And my biggest thing is to let people know that even if you have completely different ideologies on how to get things done, most people that are involved are really there because they want to do good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best thing about being involved in politics. That's what my passion for it is we are actually in a position now where we can help people, whether it's through legislation to change things, to be able to lower the cost at the wastewater management place so that everybody's bills can
right.
go down, you know, or our district office. That's what they do, is they have case management and they help people deal with problems with the state of California. And to be able to be involved in that, to me, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that gives me so much joy.
I know that human trafficking has been something, a cause that's very close to your heart. So tell me if I'm correct, if I have this correct, that your ability to be able to go to Sacramento helps you in being able to know how to effectively try and move those things forward or get people informed so that they can be their own best advocates.
It definitely has. And one of the most exciting things about all of this, because Jay and I are such partners in all of this, and he encourages me to be out there and to be doing what I want to do mm-hmm. as an advocate. And it's given me my own voice to be able to talk to people and to be able, it gives me a purpose and a reason to get out there and talking to people. But I really believe that our society has so many complex issues, and they're very difficult to solve. And people just look to government and say, "Why can't you get this done? Why can't you solve this?" And we have taken the responsibility away from ourselves to help solve those problems. We've taken away our responsibility to our neighbors and to our communities and just said, "Oh, well, government's going to solve that. And these problems can't be solved by government."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the biggest thing that my eyes have been open to being involved in government, is that everything has unintended consequences. Every program that you try to start has issues with it. And so we need to, as a society, take back that responsibility. And one of the neatest things about being in the community so much on Jay's behalf when he's up in Sacramento is I get to see how many amazing organizations we have in this district and all over California, but mm-hmm. I really get to see on a personal level the lives that are changing in our communities because people in our communities are taking the time to step forward and saying, this is a little problem, but I can do this to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that famous saying of how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. But I think that's been my biggest eye-opener is we can't give that responsibility away to government. There's not enough money that can be raised in taxes. There's never enough. And there's never a good solution at the government level. It has to come from us. It has to come from our families and our neighborhoods mm-hmm. and our communities.
I believe you are on a great path of influence in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'd like to say to you is, typically when a woman is at the table,
mm-hmm.
things get done. Right? Things get done.
Yes, they do.
Yes, we have a way mm-hmm. of being able to negotiate and bring people together.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Around the common good. And if it's not for frontline soldiers like yourself that are willing to do this work
mm-hmm.
and have gathered the strength to do this work.
Where that came from, I don't know.
You know what? Let's just say it's God sent.
I 100% believe that.
We stand a chance of being made better than continuing on the path to negativity. So I say to you today, congratulations for that appointment and for the drive and initiative that you bring to that table to make things better, to reintroduce to us the need for integrity, the need for character, the need to practice respect and dignity.
Yes.
And so we support you in all of those efforts. We thank you for being willing to step up during a time which is tumultuous.
Very much so.
Within our society, to say, I'm willing to do this work. We also thank you for being a great partner and spouse to our assemblyman. We've seen him do great things over these past 4 years. And we know that it's not just him. We give you some of the credit for those things that he is able to do. But it has been my pleasure to have you on this show, to introduce you to our community, and hopefully they've gained a little insight on the wonderful woman that resides within you, who stands on her own merit, who is brilliant, who is beautiful, who is purposeful and thoughtful with what you are doing. So thank you for coming out today and sharing with us. We appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
This program has been made possible by the generous support of Shear Realty, exceeding expectations for over 37 years. Visit us online at dvlproject.com and follow us on Facebook.
I'm a dreamer, I'm a visionary, I'm a leader, I'm extraordinary, though life can get you down sometimes, it seems. I'll never let it take away my dream.
Well, this was our last show, and I hope that you enjoyed what's been presented as much as we've enjoyed putting it together. I want to thank El Dorado, especially Tim Anderson, Preston Stone, Colleen Quinn, and Roxanne Scafidi for all of the support you've provided to DVL over the past 10 years. I also want to thank our guests and sponsors, especially Shear Realty, for making this opportunity possible. Thank you to the listeners. You motivate us to bring quality and inspiring field programming to the High Desert. For more information on upcoming events and how you can get involved with the Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders Project, visit us online at dvlproject.com and follow us on Facebook. I'm Regina Weatherspoon Bell. Remember, be kind to yourself and others, and be the change you want to see.
You have been listening to High Desert Dialogue, a public service program of El Dorado Broadcasters. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for High Desert Dialogue, email us at vvpsa@edbroadcasters.com.
El Dorado Broadcasters is an equal opportunity employer serving the greater High Desert area on great stations like Y102, Cat Country 100.7, 106.5 The Fox, Talk 960, and HD 96.3. Join us again next weekend at the same time for High Desert Dialogue.